Welcome to our podcast, Stillbirth Happens. Let's talk. My name is Erin Bone, and I'm a proud mother to three children. My daughter Gracie is 17 years old, my daughter Ryan would have been 15, and my son Quinn is now 13 years old.
My name is Jamie Asher, and I'm also a mother to three. My daughter Marissa is 20 years old, my son James was stillborn in 2010, and my son Zachary was stillborn in 2013. Erin and I met at a conference and have been friends ever since. Our shared identity as bereaved parents and our commitment to support other families whose lives are touched by stillbirth has bonded us forever.
Jamie and I are here to help you feel less alone. We are working to break the silence around stillbirth. As Jamie and I know personally, stillbirth happens. Let's talk.
In this very special episode of Stillbirth Happens, we're joined by our own children. You'll hear first from my daughter, Marissa, then from Erin's daughter, Gracie, and finally her son, Quinn.
After that, we'll be joined by Andrea Warnick, a registered psychotherapist, nurse, who will talk about how we can support living children in processing their grief after stillbirth and offer ideas for keeping a stillborn sibling present in family life.
First, let me introduce you all to my daughter, Marissa.
It's so nice to finally meet you. Like, I feel like I know you, but I really don't.
No, yeah, it's wonderful meeting you. It's awesome.
So where are you right now?
I am in my apartment at university in Kelowna.
What are you taking?
Nursing.
Nursing. And what kind of nurse do you want to be? Like, general nurse?
I'm not too sure yet.
Yeah.
I don't know, whoever the wind takes me.
I love it.
Yeah.
What do you like to do for fun?
Yeah, I like to just be active. I like to be outdoors for fun. I love going on hikes. And recently I've been into running. My roommates and I are running a half marathon. So just training for that recently has been kind of fun.
So we're here to talk about your brothers. How old were you when your mom was pregnant with James? And how old were you when your mom was pregnant with Zachary?
So I think I was about 4 when my mom was pregnant with James. And I think 7, I'm not 100% sure, but somewhere around there with Zachary.
Do you remember your mom being pregnant with both brothers?
I don't really remember James per se, but I do remember Zachary. I think I actually came up with his name. I remember we were sitting out on our porch or on our back deck, and I was like, Zachary, that's the name.
Wow. This is something your mom has never told me.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think I've shared.
No.
Oh.
Marissa named him.
Yeah.
Did you know you were having a boy with Zachary?
We did know. We were having a boy, and we had talked about names, and she just wanted to be a part of the naming process, and Zachary happened to be one of the names I liked as well. I had never brought it up, but she did, and she named him.
That is amazing. I love that. What do you remember about your mom being pregnant with Zachary?
Yeah, I remember when she told me she was pregnant, because as a kid, I often asked her, I was like, am I going to have another sibling? Or like, am I going to have a sibling? Blah, blah, blah. And I remember, I think I got, what is it called? Like when you have a first communion. But I remember that night after they told me that she was pregnant with Zachary. And I think I like exploded with happiness and started jumping all over the room.
And what an amazing memory that is to have, like on this journey of grief is so profoundly sad, but there's also some good, right? And there's some exciting memories that I'm so glad you have to hang on to. Do you remember when you found out James died when he was stillborn? Do you remember any of that?
Honestly, not much from James. All my memories are kind of Zachary in that.
So with Zachary, this part, I do know that your mom has shared with me you were able to meet Zachary.
I was, yes. I went to the hospital.
Who were you with when you found out that Zachary had passed away?
I was at my grandma's house because she was taking care of me. I didn't really know why at the time, but I don't know. I feel like as a 7-year-old, I was very perceptive and I kind of felt like something was off because normally like my parents don't just drop me off and then don't say anything and leave. And then my parents came back and I immediately saw that my mom had a wristband on. And I was like, that doesn't look like a Playland wristband. That looks like a hospital wristband. And I immediately knew because I feel like at the time I remembered James passing away and what that looked like. Even though I don't remember it now, I feel like when I was younger, I did. And I knew, and it was the same feeling. And I don't know if this is exactly what happened, but this is just what I remember. I remember going into like a closet at my grandma's and just like sitting on the floor and just started crying because I knew, but no one had said anything. I knew, and the look on my mom's face too. So that was really sad. And I remember my mom coming over and I think she just sat outside the closet and we had a good cry together. And then I came out and gave her a hug. And then I think they went back to the hospital and then my grandma and I went there and met them there.
Oh, I love that your mom and you had that time together. Do you remember going into the hospital room?
I do, sort of. I think she was in a single room and the nurse was just like finishing up something. And so like the curtain, and then the nurse opened the curtain, and then there was my mom, and then she had a little baby with her. And I remember that I got to hold him. So that was really special and really cool. I could tell my mom was really, she was really sad, but I could tell that she really enjoyed seeing me and Zachary interact. And yeah, it was cool.
And having that sibling moment together.
No, it's special.
Yeah. When you guys all got home, your mom has also shared that there was some play therapy that she had you in. Do you remember going to play therapy?
I do. At the time, I didn't really know why I was going to play therapy. Well, I did because I kind of had anxiety as a kid. I think I had pretty severe anxiety. I didn't really know where that anxiety stemmed from. But now as I'm older and reflecting, I'm like, okay, maybe it's like attachment or issues or something like that. Or not issues, but like I was just scared that people in my life were gonna be taken away without me being able to do anything, or stuff was out of my control and I didn't know how to handle it. The play therapy did teach me a thing called heartstrings. And when I felt like sad, or just I missed my mom, or I felt like I didn't have any control over my life, I would pull my heartstrings and my mom would pull her heartstrings and then we would be connected. And that really stuck with me for a really long time. And I still think about it. And sometimes I still pull them sometimes.
Were you a part of the play therapy, Jamie?
We always went in for the first like 5 minutes and then left. And it was Marissa and her therapist. And we went back for the last 5 minutes. And sometimes my husband and I had a session ourselves with the therapist, but it was generally just her and her therapist. Yeah.
I love that. Do you ever talk about them?
Yeah. As a kid in elementary school, I'll just kind of go chronologically. Our teachers would always have us fill out these like get to know me forms. And there was always the question that was like, do you have any siblings? And I often sat there sitting at my desk staring at those words because yes, I have siblings, but how do I explain to people in my class that they're not here on earth with me right now? So I think at that point in my life, I didn't want to explain it to anybody. I didn't really want to talk about it to people. I was quite a shy kid. So I put no, but it was like a punch to the heart every time. And then I just kind of avoided the topic in middle school and in high school. But of course, my friends knew. Like, I would tell all my close friends or people that I you know, talk to more often. But I would say the majority of my class didn't know. And now that I'm kind of in university, you know, I tell people, and I recently got a tattoo. It's of a dragonfly. It's for my brothers and for my mom. So I get some questions that are like, oh, like you have a really cute tattoo. Does it have a meaning? And then I'm kind of put in that same situation of like the whole elementary school thing of, do I actually tell them the real meaning, or do I do the watered down version of like, oh, it's like a me and my mom thing, you know? And sometimes I deep dive into the fact that it's for my mom, but also for my brothers. And sometimes I just say, oh, thank you. Yeah, it's really cute. So
use your intuition, really, of whether you're going to share or not share. And there's really no rhyme or reason. Not that you're not willing to share, but it also depends on who in the trust.
No, exactly. It definitely depends on who the person is and then what kind of setting I'm in.
And you do what feels right. Can you go into detail of why you got the tattoo that you chose to get?
Yeah. From the minute I can even remember, my mom, dragonflies for her have been a sign of like resilience and hope. And it was our plan to get it together, but due to like certain circumstances, I just have mine before. So eventually she'll get one too, and we'll have them together. But it's to remind me every time I look at it, I just remember that my mom is this like strong, powerful, resilient woman that like inspires me to be like that. And it also reminds me of my brothers. And I have it in a spot. It's kind of on my bicep. And if I give myself a hug, the dragonfly goes right on my heart, which I realized that after. So it was just kind of like a little extra thing. But so whenever I feel really sad, I just kind of do that. And I know that they're all there with me.
Whew. Okay, I know nobody can see us. We can see each other. And Jamie and I are just crying right now.
This mama can't talk at the moment.
Oh, so I have heard about this plan of doing. Is it going to be matching tattoos?
Similar. Mine's going to be a little bit different than hers, but yes, it'll be the same dragonfly.
Oh, I love it. Did you guys plan on this is what we're going to do, or how did it come about? How did you guys decide that let's do this? Let's go and get matching or similar tattoos?
I think it's when I was either in grade 11 or grade 10. And I just go to my mom and I'm like, we should get tattoos. And she's like, what? And I'm like, we should get dragonfly tattoos. She was like, well, we got to really think about it. And I'm like, yeah. And then I thought about it and I was in grade 12 and I was like, I still want a dragonfly tattoo. First year, I still wanted a dragon, like first year university, I still wanted a dragonfly tattoo. And I was like, you know what? It's second year university. I've wanted this tattoo for like over 3 years. I'm just going to get it. I don't know if my mom has a different story. But.
Yeah, I mean, mom's been thinking for many years of getting one too, but has never, you know, jumped on it. And then the conversation started, like Marissa said, and it was always going to be, mine's going to be two dragonflies, actually. But the fact that that was something that she wanted and that we are going to do together just means a lot.
Do you have any memories or rituals that you, or traditions that you have created to keep James and Zachary memory alive in your home and have days that commemorate them? Or do you have any of those at all?
On their birthdays, we normally have dinner, what kind of we think they would want dinner to be at like each age they're at. I think one year we had mac and cheese and like chocolate cake. I don't know. So just to kind of match and then we just think of activities, what they would have liked to do at that age. And just whenever we see something that's kind of age appropriate for one of them, we always just kind of tell each other, oh, like, I bet Zachary would be doing that right now. Or, right. You know.
Oh, that's fun. For your future, I don't know if you are thinking if you're wanting to have kids one day, but if you choose to have kids one day, do you think that having two brothers who are stillborn, do you think that that has weighed on your thought process, or have you put any thoughts into this? I know you're super young, but have you thought about any of that?
Yeah, I've actually thought about it a lot. I voiced this to my mom before and in my head multiple times that I'm kind of scared to announce to anyone, really, even my mom, which I feel like at the time I'll probably tell her, but just like the general public or like even my friends, that I kind of have to wait until after 23 weeks because both of my brothers were still born, I think, at 23 weeks. So for me, I just have to get past 23 weeks and then I'll be able to tell people. And this is just me right now, but I've thought about that for a while. I think since Zachary died, honestly, from the time that I could even comprehend of having children, I just have to wait that time because I just don't want to get hurt like I was hurt when I was younger. And I don't want to get too attached, if you know what I mean. And I know that sounds kind of sad, but I think it might be like a coping thing.
Yeah, your mom and I understand that completely. On the flip side of it, how has your brother's deaths influenced you on how you deal with the grief and how you deal with loss and sadness? Do you see any of the positives that have come out from your brother's stories?
It has definitely influenced me as a person and my beliefs and my coping mechanisms and basically kind of shaped me to who I am today. It kind of gave me a push into the healthcare field and like thinking of wanting to be a nurse just because I've seen what my mom has gone through at the hospital. And it just kind of made me want to help people through tough times. And it's also given me many different coping strategies. Like, I mean, what I learned in therapy with the heartstrings and just also kind of living every day for the moment, because life is a beautiful gift, and live every day with a positive outlook because everything can change in an instant. So that's kind of how it's influenced me in that way.
Yeah. The whole of life happening to you at such a young age, it breaks my heart that you and my kids and other people who have had profound loss in their childhood, how much it made you probably grow up a lot faster. On the flip side of that, talking to you, what a gift. And I think your brothers would be so incredibly proud of you because you are a phenomenal young woman who is going to be an incredible nurse one day.
Aw, thank you.
Thanks so much to Marissa for sharing her experience with us. I think it's time to meet Gracie.
My name's Gracie. I'm 17. I'm in grade 11. My competitive swim, I hang out with my friends, and that's about it.
So good to see you and talk to you today. Thanks so much for being here with us.
Yeah, no problem.
We're here today because we want to hear about your experience. How old were you when your sister Ryan was born still?
I was 2.5.
Okay. And so do you remember when you first understood that Ryan had died?
Well, I didn't think I remembered any of it from when I was like 2. And I don't think I really started understanding it until probably kindergarten or grade 1. It's always been like talked about lots at home. And so like with my friends at school and stuff, I would talk about it a lot. And then, I don't know, it just started making more sense, I think, as I got older and the more I like talked about it and stuff.
Yeah. So how do you talk about it with your friends? And what does that look like for you? And maybe it's changed over the years. And so you can share with us sort of different stages.
Yeah. When I was younger, I just kind of was like, yeah, like I have a brother and a sister and like I'm the oldest and stuff. And I think now I don't like mention it as often as like I used to when I was younger.
And what was it like for you as a little kid, knowing that you had a sister who had passed away?
I don't know. It was just so like normal for me. Like I didn't like feel any different from anybody else. Like it was still sad, but like it was just like that's just how I've been used to like everything, because before she was stillborn I didn't remember anything really because I was so young.
Right. And do you remember, because 13 months after Ryan was born, your brother was born, I know that you were young, very little, but your sister didn't come home and your brother did. Is there any memory of that at all?
So I don't actually remember this happening, but so when my sister was stillborn, I stayed the night at one of my mom's like family friend's house, and my dad came and picked me up and he was like, hey, we're going to go see your mom. And then a year later when Quinn was born, then he was like, we're going to go see your baby brother. And in my head, I thought that if the baby was born, then my mom had died. But if the year before when the baby had died, then my mom was still alive. So I don't remember anything of that. And that's just like what my mom has always told me. But so I guess in my little like 2-year-old head, that's just how I thought of it.
That's how you comprehended.
Yeah.
Wow. That's very powerful. So remembering back when, and you said it was sort of kindergarten, grade one-ish, where you sort of have memories of you realizing everything. Is there anything that your mom or family did that helped, do you think? Or Ryan's just always been part of your family?
Yeah, I think Ryan's just like always been a part of our family. And I even like would draw her like in family photos and stuff like that. Like we would like have to like draw our family like stick man and stuff like that. And I would draw Ryan like in the sky with wings, and it was just like, it's what I did.
And so do you remember any ways in which you expressed your feelings when you were little?
I do remember feeling very like confused. And one of the ways my mom like helped me out with that was she had like art therapy. So she would like just give me a canvas and some paint, and like I would just paint. And so I don't like remember any more like doing them, but when I was younger, I would be able to like point out and be like, I remember doing that one. And like, it was like, I was really happy doing that one, or I was really angry doing that one. And I think that helped.
Absolutely. As you've gotten older, has the way you think about Ryan or her place in your life changed?
Not really. Like, I still think of her every day, and like, I still think of her as my sister. I just don't like talk about her as often, but I don't think much has like changed.
Do you ever, go visit Ryan at her grave?
Yeah, I did today, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, one of my friends had an appointment, so we dropped her off there, and then we were driving around, and I was like, let's just go to, like, the cemetery. I haven't been there for a while. So we walked off, and I cleaned off her grave because there was a bunch of snow on it.
That's beautiful. And that's beautiful that you and your friends went with you today, too, to see her?
Yeah, they did.
Have you shared her there with them before?
Yeah, I have. We've been friends since... for quite a few years, so.
Yeah, beautiful. And so do you talk about Ryan with your friends?
Sometimes it's come up, but I'm usually like a lot closer friends with them when I bring it up now.
Mm-hmm. We talked to my daughter the other day, and that's, I think that's the similar response as she gave to Aaron, was the closer the friends, the more that she spoke about them. So that's very similar. How does your family keep Ryan's memory alive?
Well, every year on her birthday, we make angel food cake, and my brother and I will like help decorate the cake. On October 15th, my mom lights a candle for her.
Yeah. Tell us about the cake. Can you think about one of the cakes one year that you can describe for us, share with us?
Last year, I made it by myself, and I took the sprinkles, and they were like bigger. So I made like flowers out of it, and I covered her cake with flowers.
Oh, that's beautiful. What a beautiful tradition you have. Some people who experience stillbirth wonder how to talk to their other children about it. What do you think is important for parents or siblings to know?
I would say don't lie about it. Like, it's a really heavy topic, and it's really hard for somebody like so young to understand it. But I think if you like lie, then it doesn't, as they grow up, like their thought of it isn't the truth really. And then I think when they really find out, then it's just more confusing in a way. So I feel like it's better to like talk about it often, but be like truthful with it, even though it's hard.
Do you think you maybe had to grow up faster or in a different way, or understanding complexities of things differently?
I would say like in some ways, yes, but I also like didn't grow up much more different than any other kids in my grade. It's just that like death was less awkward to talk about, because if we ever had any questions growing up, like we could just ask my mom. So I think when I was younger, like, I had a better understanding of it than other kids in my grade, in a way. But I don't think I grew up any faster than them.
Well, your answer right there just shows me that your insight is far greater than even many adults. Death is awkward, and stillbirth, death is even more awkward for people to talk about. So the fact that you and I are sitting here today having a conversation, and for us, it's normal, is pretty remarkable. So thank you for just being so open and honest. It's a breath of fresh air to speak with you. Something came to mind when we were talking, and just the dynamic with your siblings, because you're in a family where you were born first. You're the firstborn, and then Ryan was stillborn, and then Quinn came. Do the two of you speak of Ryan, or are there dynamics in play that have happened anytime over the years that you can think of where the three of you are in some sort of interaction?
Yeah, when me and my brother were younger, we didn't have to share a room because there was only two other bedrooms, but we used to fight over which room Ryan would have to sleep in. And Quinn used to always be like, no, like, she would sleep in my room because, like, we're closer in age. And then as we got older, it was like, no, like, Ryan would be in your room because you guys are both girls. So we would, like, fight over that. I remember even, like, when Quinn and I were younger too, we used to talk about, like, what foods we used to think that Ryan would like, because there were some things that I liked and some things that Quinn didn't like.
That's so neat. I like hearing about this insight and what those conversations may have looked like. And so looking into the future, I know that you're 17 and this, you know, is into the future, but do you think Ryan and your family's experience with losing Ryan may influence your decision or what your thoughts on childbirth look like?
I think, like, I still want to have children. The thought of it, like, makes me super nervous, but I know that if it were to happen, because I've grown up with it being such, like, so talked about so often, I would be in a different position. Like, I'm not the sibling anymore, I'm the mom. But I think if it were to happen to me, I would know that I could get through it in a way. And, like, there's, like, people that I could talk to and stuff.
We are so, so very grateful that you spent the time with us this afternoon to have this chat. And you're going to help a lot of people. So thank you so much, Gracie.
Thank you.
Now it's time to bring in my son, Quinn. Here's our chat with him.
My name's Quinn. I'm 13. I live in Manitoba. I have some top three sports. I really like hockey. I've played it for a little while, since I'm 7. And then I've just picked up the sport golf. It's very fun.
Nice.
Really enjoying it so far. And then badminton. It's a school sport, but I'm pretty good at it and I'm enjoying it so far.
That's awesome, Quinn. I'll go back to hockey. It's one of my favorites and I come from a hockey family too. So I hear you're a goalie. What got you into that?
I picked it up one time and my coach said I was pretty good. I mean, dad wasn't too happy, but.
Goalies tend to have, like, different prep that they like to do before the game. Is that something in your mind too, or how you prepare for your games?
I mean, I like to show up a little bit earlier than most people, and I have to just, like, sit by myself for a bit and just kind of, like, being quiet. And then I'll warm up by myself, and then I'll go warm up with my team, and then we'll go back in the dressing room and get ready.
Excellent. Excellent. So you were born about 13 months after your sister Ryan passed away from stillbirth. Do you remember when you first found out about Ryan?
She's kind of just always been there. Like, I just remember my mom telling me about her memory box and showing me stuff in it.
Yep. Are there any family traditions or little things that you do to make you feel connected to Ryan?
All the time during her birthday, we always go and make an angel cake for her and we decorate it. And it's kind of just like a memory of her. And then we'll look through her memory box and that's really it.
Nice. So as a family, you make the cake together?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And so when you say she's always there, what does that mean? How can you describe that?
Well, it's like, it would almost be like a little gap in, like, time. It's like she is or she was there, and then she just has a space in it. So if, like, we didn't have that, she, like, our family wouldn't be kind of complete.
Wow. That's a great way to describe it, Quinn. So have you ever had to explain Ryan to a friend of yours?
Yes. I've explained it a couple times now, but just, like, little questions of, like, did you get a meter or something like that? But then I explain it, like, the same way to everybody mostly. I just mostly say, like, the timeline of when she was born and when I was born. I explain that I didn't really meet her, but I'll say some stories about her.
So being part of a family that has gone through loss, do you think it has changed the way that you see things or handle tough stuff?
Not really, because if you really think about it, every family has, like, gone through people who've, like, died in their family. So it's like almost everybody has to experience that in once in their life. But, like, I mean, I think it would just affect everybody the same.
Mm-hmm. So being born after Ryan was stillborn, is there anything you feel is unique to you in your family in relation to Ryan?
This may happen to all young children. Usually the youngest will get treated differently, maybe get, like, more attention. But, like, I think I may have gotten extra attention just because, like, Ryan, she was not here. And then when I was born, it was just, like, a relief almost. So then they probably, like, spent a lot of time with me.
So do you have some examples that you could share of that?
Some of my friends call me coddled. Like, I almost get treated, like, better than some of them. Get more attention, get, like, more advice. I don't know. It's just, like, almost a better life. Not really, though. You can't really say that, but, like, kind of is.
Yeah, but it's something that is noticeable, or you feel and your friends notice something.
Mm-hmm.
Quinn, if you could say something to Ryan, what would it be?
I've always wanted to know, like, what her personality and her, like, looks would be like.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, what would she wear? And, like, what type of person would she be?
Quinn, do you remember having a conversation with me in the truck going to hockey? And you were having, like, a panic attack?
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember just this year?
Oh,
what you said to me? Okay. Can you share that?
I've seen possibly she may have been really stressed when she was, like, I was in her room. And, like, what?
In my womb? In my belly when I was
belly? With you? And then what happened? Maybe she was really stressed during it, and that may have caused me to have anxiety because I've seen that I do.
Thank you so much for sharing with us this afternoon, Quinn.
Thank you.
And now let's meet Andrea Warnick.
My name's Andrea Warnick. I'm a registered nurse and a registered psychotherapist. Ended up really developing a passion for having the hard conversations and the conversations that I don't think we have enough. Children absolutely grieve, and often people wonder if they grieve the same as adults or if it presents differently. There's this great quote that for kids, it's sort of like puddle jumping, you know, and they're in it and it's huge. And then they jump out and they play and have fun. And then for adults, it's like they're in this, like, just wading through this ocean of grief. I believe it's Julie Stokes from Winston's Wish who said it that way. And I think she's right on. I often remind people, just because kids are playing and having fun or seeming happy doesn't mean that they're not grieving. I always encourage families after a death, or if we know that there's a death that's going to happen in the family, to be honest. I sometimes refer to, you know, our 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds as our most disenfranchised grievers that get quite quickly pushed to the sidelines, because sometimes people feel like, well, they're too young, so we don't even have the conversations with them. And that's where I really encourage families to take the lead in opening the conversation, even with the youngest of children. Use the right language, call the sibling by name if the baby has a name, you know, and use the D word too, which is hard. Sometimes families will say, well, you know, that they've passed on or they've passed away. Kids often don't understand what that is. And so I'll encourage, you know, use the words that the baby has died. Tell them what that means. It means a body doesn't work anymore and it won't ever work again. But then let your kids take the lead in how much information do they want. quite often if kids have had enough, they're going to leave the conversation or they're going to start fidgeting, they're going to start playing, at which point I'd want to check in. Now, I'm not going to make an assumption that they don't want any more information. It might be that they need to play, they need to fidget, they need to move their body physically while listening to the information. So I would just check in and say, I'm wondering, would you like us to stop having this conversation right now and we can come back to it later? Or would you like to hear more? Right. So giving really the most important information right now, which is often the baby has died and how this is going to directly affect the child right now. Maybe the family's going to be at the hospital a lot more. Maybe there's trips to the funeral home. I've had many siblings, you know, be able to be at the funeral home or the hospital, hold their sibling who's died. That's where I want to let them know, like, do you want to touch your brother? You can. I want you to know that even when a body dies, you can touch it. You can hold it. That's okay. If they want to, I would never force them, but I want to invite them. And I love that idea, like the taking photos is a really important approach as well that I often just encourage families to think about. You know, if there's siblings, take photos with the siblings. You can decide if you don't want them, that's fine. But if you change your mind down the road, and I've actually worked with a number of families who that's exactly what's happened for. They didn't think they wanted them necessarily at the time and down the road that they were incredibly grateful to be able to have those memories of their time physically together. When it comes to memorializing, I really encourage families to include kids. Often what will happen in our society is we've got funerals, we have memorials and things like that. I encourage people to have those rituals, acknowledging and almost introducing the community to all of their babies who have died, giving them names, dates. In our society, we're so quick sometimes to be like, we want to celebrate a life, no matter how brief that life was, but almost to the exclusion of grieving the death. And that's where I really encourage the families I work with, like, make some time to do grief collectively. Music can be a very powerful way of sort of eliciting emotion in a way that people don't need to talk, but just you can be together and maybe have some collective grief that happens communally. And I really believe we're designed as humans to do the hardest things in life in community. But for the long haul, maybe it's planting a tree. Maybe it's a situation where I think of one family that I work with. Actually, what they do is they have a day of the year, the baby's birthday, and they name it the baby's name, and they do something every year on that day to honor their baby. A really important piece to in terms of supporting kids when a baby has died in the family is to really reiterate for them that this is not their fault. And I think often that's not on the radar for families. I know many families are pretty surprised when I suggest that that might be something that their child hasn't verbalized but might be grappling with. There's no harm done. And just across the board, even if the child's not expressing any feelings of responsibility or guilt, just saying, I want you to know there's nothing you did to cause this. This is not your fault. I find language can be powerful. So if the family is using born still or stillbirth, if there are medical names, even with young kids, we can talk about that and help them understand what that means and how that contributed to the baby dying. We're going to use that D word even when it feels hard. Another word that I'm often encouraging families to teach, even the youngest of kids, is the word grief. That's where I want to let them know, you know, you might see us being really sad. You might see grandma crying. Go through what they can expect and let them know this is grief. Often in life, when something really hard happens, such as our baby dying, we have all kinds of different thoughts and feelings. And some of those include really sad, that can be mad. I like to always give kids permission too. You can be happy as well, right? We can be happy even when we're grieving and giving them explicit permission to have the wide range of emotions, because we know kids innately do a much more beautiful job than we do as adults in juggling that deep joy and deep sorrow at the same time. But I really want to prepare kids for the emotional reactions of the people around them, including at any of our ceremonies or memorializations, and let them know if you talk about our baby who died and I start crying, you've not made me sad. I'm sad because our baby died. And that's a confusing one for kids. If I talk about the family member who died and the adults or anyone starts getting upset, their automatic sort of assumption is I am inflicting pain on this person. And so it's not unusual that kids will just start backing off and not want to have the conversation, because quite often kids are trying to protect adults just as much as adults are trying to protect their kid.
Thank you so much for listening and spending time with us.
This episode of Stillbirth Happens, Let's Talk was produced by the Hummingbird Project of BC Women's Hospital and Health Center. It was produced by Jasmine Coleman.
If this episode resonated with you, we invite you to take care of yourself in whatever way feels right, whether that's by accepting support, setting boundaries, or connecting with others who understand.
You can find information, resources, connections, and ways to take care of yourself in the show notes of every episode and on our website. Go to bcwomens.ca and search for Stillbirth Happens.
To stay connected, follow us and drop us a comment or a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We truly do love hearing from you.
Thank you again for joining us. Until next time, remember to be gentle with yourself. You're not alone. Thank you.